Your Honor reiterates the readiness to help settle the existing disputes between Armenia and Azerbaijan, saying that foreign forces cannot solve the problems of the Caucasus. More than 70,000 British university staff are to launch a large-scale strike later this month over pay, work conditions, and pensions. And various states report voting problems during U.S. midterms as officials scramble to reassure voters of the integrity of the election. Hello, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to World News. Our top story, Iran has reiterated readiness to help solve the existing problems between Azerbaijan and Armenia, stressing Tehran's respect for the territorial integrity of its neighbors. Foreign Ministry spokesman said Iran's principled policy is based on maintaining good ties with all of its neighbors. Nasser Kanani said that Tehran supports the peaceful settlement of differences between Baku and Yerevan within the framework of international law. He said problems in the Caucasus must be solved by regional countries, as foreign forces will not help resolve those issues. He added the recent military exercise by Iran's armed forces in the country's northwest was a regular move, and Iran's neighbors had been informed in advance. Former U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton has spoken about recent riots in Iran, saying that protesters were armed with weapons smuggled from Iraq's Kurdistan region. Bolton made the remarks in an interview with BBC Persia TV channel. He criticized rioters as opposition and said he's seen images of some protesters being trained and armed in Iraq's semi-autonomous Kurdistan region. Earlier, Iran's Border Guard Command announced the seizure of over 5,000 pieces of U.S.-made cold weapons at the border. The commander of the Border Force, General Ahmad Ali Gudarzi, said over 600 firearms, including pistols and rifles, were discovered and seized over the past 45 days. Protests erupted in several Iranian cities in September after a young woman fainted at a police station and was pronounced dead at a hospital days later. Protests were initially peaceful but soon morphed into riots and vandalism. Sayed Mohammad Marandi is a professor at the University of Tehran. He says that terrorist groups themselves have admitted to an active role in the recent riots in Iran.
They admit openly, or they claim, that they are active inside Iran. And they claim to be leading the riots. So there's no surprise when people are seen, photos are taken, footage is taken of people using knives, slitting police officers by the throat, shooting and killing other police officers and Besiege members, burning people alive, and then simultaneously being glorified in Western countries and in the Western media as freedom fighters, and Persian language media based in London calling their acts of murder, of burning people alive, of brutality against the police as legitimate. And if these media outlets were in English, Ofcom would, and they were directed towards an English audience or an English country or British English-speaking country, Ofcom would shut these television stations down immediately and put these people on trial.
Iran's new version of indigenously made missiles defense system, the Bavar 373, is capable of hitting targets in 5 minutes after takeoff, as Saman Khujuri reports. The missile system has made Iran among just five countries that have this highly sophisticated technology.
Iran has recently unveiled the newest version of its homegrown missile defense system, Bavar 373, which is said to have taken one step closer to the Russian-made S-400 anti-aircraft weapon system. During the test fire, a stationary target was detected at a range of more than 450 kilometers by the optimized radar of the missile system and was tracked at a range of about 405 kilometers and was hit at a range of more than 300 kilometers. The long-range missile has solid fuel and was evaluated during operation for the first time. The detection radar range of the Bavar 373 system has increased from 350 to 450 kilometers, and its engagement radar range has increased from 260 to 400 kilometers. The Bovar 373 long-range air defense system is capable of detecting up to 100 targets, tracking 60 of them and engaging with 6 concurrently.
All air defense systems are divided into 3 main categories based on their missions and operations, including long-range, middle-range, and short-range systems. Bovar 373 is a long-range missile system. Only 4 or 5 countries in the world have the technology to manufacture such a strategically important missile system. These countries do not even allow other countries to master such a technology, and if they provide any country with such a missile system, they will operate and overhaul the systems themselves, and operational and communicational codes are not given to the using country.
A distinguishing feature of Bovar 373 is its vertical launching system with square launchers, mostly used for air defense on warships. The system's missile range has increased from 200 to 300 kilometers, and its engagement altitude has increased from 27 to 32 kilometers.
The great achievement, which has been made as a result of the production of Bovar 373, aside from its defensive goals, is that this project has institutionalized the path of developing anti-aircraft air defense system inside the country. It means that we're now highly capable of producing any form of anti-air defense system inside the country with the help of our own universities, startup companies, and Iranian youth and specialists. By using Bovar 373 missile system, we can counter different types of missiles, bombers, and ballistic missiles.
The Bovar air defense system employs 3 different types of missiles to hit targets at various altitudes. It's been able to hit targets just 5 minutes after fire at an altitude of 43,000 feet.
Iran maintains that its military might poses no threat to regional countries, stressing that the Islamic Republic's defense doctrine is entirely based on deterrence. Salman Kujurip, Tehran.
In Britain, strikes are planned to be held later in November amid an unprecedented rising inflation and nationwide economic crisis. Strike by London Underground workers is set to start Thursday. Millions of passengers will face disruption in their transportation. That after authorities failed to resolve a contract dispute with workers. Officials have cautioned passengers will have limited or no service starting Thursday. The workers are demanding pay rise to help soften the blow of inflation, which has already hit double-digit levels. Meanwhile, more than 70,000 university staff at over 150 universities throughout the country will strike for 3 days over pay, work conditions, and pensions. Their strike is set to take place on the 24th, 25th, and 30th of November. Eurozone finance ministers meet in Brussels to exchange views on the EU's worsening energy crisis. Governments throughout the bloc have so far failed to mitigate the economic costs associated with cutting off Russia's cheap gas supplies. Jerome Hughes has your details out of the Belgian capital.
It is blatantly obvious that Brussels is losing its energy war with Moscow as prices across the 19-country eurozone continue to skyrocket. Washington is benefiting by selling gas to the EU at a high price. Eurozone finance ministers met on Monday to assess the crisis.
We are focusing now also within the European Commission, within the General Council, how we can, and then also with the ministers of energy that are focusing on how we can reduce that cost in the near future.
The poorest are feeling the pain most. Eye-watering amounts have been spent to try and compensate.
Euro area governments have so far collectively spent about 1.25% on energy supports for the year, so about 200 billion euro.
Of course, it's all linked to the EU's attempts to isolate Russia over the war in Ukraine. It's costing EU taxpayers billions of euro to house Ukrainian refugees, supply weapons to the Ukrainian army, and fund the government in Kiev. Ordinary workers will have to pay for it, but the eurozone economy is beginning to flatline.
Inflation continues to be high, even surprisingly high for both Europe and the United States. Sentiment indicators are very low, indicating a risk of recession.
It appears the European Union is now in damage control mode.
I am telling that we can work, should work, to avoid that this is a prolonged period of recession.
Peace activists are calling on the EU to mediate between Russia and Ukraine, but those calls appear to be falling on deaf ears. Many people are now nervously wondering, is there an unemployment catastrophe looming in the Eurozone? Whether they are being overly pessimistic or merely realistic, there's no doubt a growing number of economists are suggesting the Eurozone is heading for a deep, prolonged recession. Jerome Hughes, the Council of the EU, Brussels.
Ukrainian president says Russia is pressing its advance in eastern Ukraine beyond the region of Donetsk, adding that Kiev will not yield a single centimeter. Volodymyr Zelensky claims Russia is suffering extraordinarily high losses in daily attacks. Russia has annexed Donetsk and three of the regions after authorities there conducted referenda on independence from Ukraine. Zelensky said 4 million people were without power in 14 regions, plus the city of Kiev, due to Russia's attacks. However, he said the majority of them do not have power under prearranged schedules. Washington and Moscow have agreed to hold meetings under the New START Nuclear Arms Reduction Treaty. U.S. State Department spokesman Ned Price says a bilateral consultative commission will meet in the near future. Now, Price was apparently referring to the mechanism for the implementation of the treaty. The U.S. official did not specify a date or location for that meeting. New START Treaty took effect back in 2011, and it caps the number of strategic nuclear weapons that the U.S. and Russia can deploy. In August, Moscow suspended its cooperation with inspections under the treaty. Russia blamed the move on travel restrictions imposed by Washington and its allies over the Ukraine war. Moscow, however, said it will still be committed to compliance with the treaty's provisions. Polls are closing in the U.S. midterm elections, but a number of problems with voting machines and absentee ballots has once again sparked accusations of fraud in the polls. Georgia, where a knife-edge Senate battle is being played out, issues are reported with ballots not being received. In Texas, long lines were seen after some machines broke down. Similar problems were reported in Arizona, where President Joe Biden won the vote 2 years ago with a very small margin. Now, it was that win which started cries of cheating by Republicans back in 2020. Former President Donald Trump also reacted to the issues in Arizona, saying the breakdowns were predominantly in Republican areas. Other Republicans have pointed to nationwide breakdowns as evidence that cheating is afoot. Almost 250 Republican candidates running in this year's vote are so-called election deniers. That is, they believe the 2020 presidential election was stolen from Donald Trump.
From the insurrection in the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021, to block the certification of the presidential election results to the October 28th attack on U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's home. These incidents are among the most high-profile instances of political violence in America in recent times. Now, many believe the problem has gone from bad to worse in recent weeks. Harassment of political candidates and voter intimidation have been reported in many parts of the country, prompting some local authorities to elevate vigilance on Election Day. Also, threats against members of Congress are up tenfold. According to Capitol Police, more than 9,600 threats against members of Congress were recorded last year. Threats against federal judges have sparked 400% in the past 6 years to more than 4,200 in 2021. Also, election poll workers have received hundreds of violent threats, leading many to resign from their positions and discouraging others from volunteering in first place. Analysts believe the current trend of increased threats to lawmakers and election officials, extremist candidates running for office, disinformation and heated rhetoric are raising the risk of domestic terrorism and other forms of extreme violence in the United States. That's why a new survey suggests that almost 1 in 5 Americans agree that violence is sometimes needed to protect democracy when elected leaders will not. Therefore, U.S. politics is now in danger of spilling over into street violence as an answer to unwanted results. Nearly 9 in 10 Americans are concerned that political divisions have intensified to the point that there is a risk of politically motivated violence in the United States, and the 2022 midterm elections could act as a catalyst for future domestic extremist violence in the U.S.
Joe Biden's comments ahead of elections reflect a deep political divide in the U.S. that could see Republicans win control of one or both chambers of Congress. A shift in power on Capitol Hill would make the Democratic president a lame duck for his remaining 2 years in office.
U.S. President Joe Biden has sounded the alarm over threats to democracy in his closing arguments ahead of the midterm elections.
Democracy is on the ballot. Political violence and intimidation are on the rise all across America. And you remember January 6th, the angry mob that stormed the U.S. Capitol, attacked law enforcement, hunted down elected officials, erected gallows to hang Vice President Pence. Well, West's opponent supported that mob. Who the hell do they think they are?
Biden has called on Americans to accept the election results and avoid resorting to violence. Also, former U.S. President Donald Trump said he's expecting a Republican victory in the elections. Trump has also vowed to make a big announcement next week, hinting that he's going to run for the 2024 presidential election.
This is the year we're going to take back the House, we're going to take back the Senate, and we're going to take back America. And in 2024, most importantly, we are going to take back our magnificent White House. I'm going to be making a very big announcement on Tuesday, November 15th, at Mar-a-Lago in Palm Beach, Florida.
The 2022 midterm elections are the first vote since the January 6th Capitol riot. Democrats have been campaigning around what they call the threat a Republican win would pose to U.S. democracy. Republicans, however, have focused their campaign on such issues as soaring inflation and the scale of violent crimes. Dozens of Republican candidates who could be elected as governors or elected administrators in key states have also echoed Trump's claims of fraud in his 2020 presidential election defeat. Election forecasters predicted that Republicans are likely to pick up roughly 25 seats in the 435-seat House of Representatives, more than enough to win a majority.
And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on World News.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The Aerospace Force of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, IRGC, successfully launched Qaem-100 three-stage solid fuel suborbital carrier, much to the chagrin of the enemies of the Islamic Republic. Qaem-100, the first of its kind, manufactured by Iranian scientists, is capable of putting satellites weighing up to 80 kilograms into orbit 500 kilometers from the Earth's surface. In this regard, we have taken a look at media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Kahan International staff writer wrote in this regard, a day after scores of millions of Iranians rallied on the streets in over 900 towns and cities in what could rightly be called an overwhelming confirmation of the April 1979 referendum that established the Islamic Republic, Iran set a new skymark by successfully launching into outer space a three-stage solid-fuel suborbital carrier. Kudos to the country's young and aspiring scientists and engineers for their unstoppable endeavors to maintain the steady pace of progress in the face of the most stringent sanctions, whose failure prompted super terrorist U.S. to incite a handful of thugs, terrorists, and traitors to try to disturb the peace in Iran in the vain hope of derailing national development. The Qaem 100 rocket, the first of its kind, manufactured by Iranian scientists, is capable of putting satellites weighing up to 800 kilograms into orbit 500 kilograms from the Earth's surface. It marks the latest achievement of the Aerospace Force of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, IRGC, which is among the country's most popular units in view of its heroic defense of the homeland during the eight-year war Washington had imposed in the 1980s, its role in the reconstruction that followed, its branching into various fields of science and technology, in addition to economy, its assistance to freedom-loving people of the region and beyond to defeat terrorist and American attempts at hegemony, and its vigilance at home against hypocrites and U.S. mercenaries. The launch vehicle's solid-fueled first stage engine, which had undergone ground tests earlier this year, successfully completed recently its first suborbital space flight. According to IRGC officials, Qaem 100 is now ready to launch Nahid, a satellite manufactured by the Ministry of Information and Communications Technology, into orbit in the near future. Iran has now four satellites in space, the previous ones being the Sina-1, launched by Russia in 2005, the Nur 2, built and launched by the IRGC in March 2022, and the Khayyam, launched with Russian help in August 2022. There are more advanced rockets and satellites under production to enable Iran to be independent in space exploration. That is vital for keeping track of the weather conditions, discovering geological deposits, and of course, protecting the peace and security of the country against would-be aggressors. They will be unveiled in due time and will show to the world the genius of the young generation of Iranians who firmly adhere to Islam, humanitarian principles, and guidelines of the far-sighted leader of the Islamic Revolution. These spectacular achievements of the Islamic Republic, whose devout and dedicated masses have thwarted every plot of its sworn enemies, the U.S., the Zionist entity, and Britain, have put Iran among the topmost countries of the world in the mastering of modern science and technology. This is the reason the U.S. is seeing red and, out of hopelessness, has resorted to a campaign of fake news to tarnish the image of the Islamic Republic, but to no avail. Iranians will be the foremost people in space as well in the near future, God willing. And the U.S. cannot do a damn thing to obstruct their skywards ascent. According to Press TV, the Aerospace Force of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, IRGC, successfully launched Qaem 100 three-stage solid fuel suborbital carrier. QAIM-100, the first of its kind, manufactured by Iranian scientists, is capable of putting satellites weighing up to 80 kilograms into orbit 500 kilometers from the Earth's surface. The launch vehicle's solid-fueled first-stage engine, which had been subjected to ground tests earlier this year, successfully completed its first suborbital space flight on Saturday, November 5th. That means, according to IRGC officials, that QAIM-100 is now ready to launch Nahid, a satellite manufactured by Iran's Ministry of Information and Communications Technology, into orbit in the near future. Brigadier General Amir Ali Hajizadeh, the commander of the IRGC's Aerospace Division, and other senior military officials supervised the flight test of the satellite carrier. Speaking on the sidelines of the ceremony, Hajizadeh said arrogant countries led by the United States are doing all they can to hinder Iran's progress, adding they cannot stand the impressive achievements of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Previous launches have drawn criticism from the United States and its allies, which have long been wary of Iran's satellite program, as the same technology can be used to develop long-range missiles. Iran says its satellite program is aimed at scientific research and other civilian applications. Hajizadeh emphasized that the Iranian youth are overcoming the heaviest sanctions in history to make such great achievements. Iran will continue down the path of progress and modern technologies, the IRGC commander insisted. Iran has over the past years succeeded in manufacturing and putting into space different satellites as well as launching various carriers. Late in June, Iran tested its domestically developed hybrid propellant satellite carrier rocket called Zuljanah for predetermined research purposes for the second time.
Food for thought.
Salam everyone, and today as Food for Thought, we present you a mind-stimulating passage from the Ziyarat, or standard form of salutation, for Hazrat Masume, peace upon her, the sister of the Prophet's 8th infallible heir, Imam Reza, peace upon him. Peace upon you, and may God ensure cognition between us and you in paradise. Raise us on the day of resurrection in your company. Bring us to your prophet's fountain of Kothar, and quench our thirst through the goblet of your ancestor, by the hand of Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, the necessity of ethics and belief. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the necessity of ethics and belief in the Islamic lifestyle. Let's start with the definition of belief. What do we mean by belief? When we say someone is a believer or he believes in something, it means that he is inclined towards something or he has submitted for something, and therefore he believes in that and he is submissive towards that. And on the other hand, obviously, when someone is inclined, when someone believes in something, obviously he has full trust on it, and therefore he follows his rest of life according to these beliefs that he has. On the other hand, we see that in the Quran, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said to the Prophet that, O Prophet, said to these people who came to you, tell them that you have not become believers right now. You didn't believe in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. But walakin qulu aslamna. But you can say that we have become Muslims. We have accepted Islam. Therefore, the level of believing, the status of a believer is higher than a Muslim. When someone says la ilaha illallah Muhammadur Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, he becomes a Muslim. But after that, he has to become a believer. He has to become a mu'min, which is higher than that. And therefore, there is a link, there is a connection between the ethics, the moral values, and the belief. That if we want to become a believer, we need to have this belief. Therefore, for that, it is necessary to have the ethics before that. If a person does not have an ethics and he claims to be a believer, Quran says that, tell them that you have not become a believer. You just have accepted the Islam. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of the necessity of ethics and the belief. We said that obviously when in the definition of belief it is said that it is to be inclined towards something. Therefore, that is the literal meaning. But the technical meaning is that someone accepts something with heart and he follows it for the rest of his life. So the belief is related to the heart and to the, obviously, the iman that we need to have. It is related to the things that we trust, we believe, and we are sure about that. So this is the level where we need to reach. On the other hand, when people are becoming Muslim, they're just becoming a Muslim, and they need to have the iman in their qulub, in their hearts, because in the Quran Allah said qalat al-a'rabu amanna. When some people came to the Prophet and they said, like, we become the believers, we believed, qul lam tu'minu, Allah said, O Prophet, tell them that you did not believe, walakin qulu aslamna, but you can say that you have become a Muslim, walamma yadkhul al-iman, and the iman has not entered fi qulubikum, in your hearts. Therefore, there is another level which we need to gain, and that level can be gained through ethics, through moral values. When a person is having a good ethics in Islam, when he has a good ethics, he follows the moral values of Islam, he prays on time, he fasts in the month of Ramadan, he is good with the people, he gives charity, alms, he nicely talks to the people, he socializes with the people as the best person, and in the area where he lives, he is known as the most knowledgeable or the ethical person, the best person of the society. And when he fulfills all these conditions, then he becomes a mu'min. Then he he gets the level of Iman. And therefore, the Quran is Hudan lil Muttaqeen, obviously, Alladhina yu'minuna bil ghaib. Then it comes the level where he believes in the ghaib, which is unseen. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
News, scientific news, artistic news, with delight.
Ecuador's Galapagos National Park is testing different coral replanting methods in an effort to restore fragile underwater ecosystems around local islands.
These corals are important because they are recyclers in the ocean. They convert all the CO2 into oxygen. These corals are important because they are refuges, nurseries, and nursery areas for some fish species.
Coral reef die-offs affect the marine food supply chains and are considered a major climate tipping point. The experimental project is run by park rangers and volunteers in a bay on Santa Cruz Island. Since 2020, they have tested how corals reproduce when they are placed on surfaces like bricks, cement, or tied together and strung on metal frames. They are growing samples in a nursery before adding them to bay. The rangers are reporting improvements with the appearance of new fish near the replanted corals.
China is taking the final step in the construction of its Tiangong space station, the second permanently inhabited station in low Earth orbit after NASA's International Space Station. The second and last lab component of the station was launched on Monday. The uncrewed module is called Mengtian, which means dreaming of the heavens. The rocket carrying it blasted off from China's Space Launch Center on the coast of the southern island province of Hainan. The 23-ton Mengtian is an advanced lab and does not have space for sleeping and sanitation. Instead, it has more space to carry payloads for scientific studies. Fan Ping is the chief designer of the project. She says this is a special step towards space research.
I think the Mengtian lab module is quite special, as it is for experiment only, which can be seen as a dedicated studio. There are 13 scientific experiment racks in the module and 37 exposed loading stations outside the module, enabling astronauts to do more extravehicular loading experiments in the future.
The Mengtian module is the last building block of the T-shaped Tiangong station. It has to fly 400 kilometers to join the two-module combination already dispatched into space. Together, the three modules will construct the station, which is designed for a lifespan of at least 10 years.
It's always a tricky task to remember people's names at a party, but not in this particular gathering in Tokyo, where all the guests at the exact same name, Hirokazu Tanaka. 178 Hirokazu Tanakas came together on Saturday to set a new namesake gathering world record. Their ages spanned from 3 years old to 80. The Guinness World Record for the largest gathering of people with the same first and last name previously belonged to Martha Stewart. 164 people with that name came together in New York in 2005. In the Tanakas gathering, every man was assigned an alias inspired by their hobbies, occupation, or favorite foods to tell them apart from others. One nicknamed by his birthplace says, "It's strange to meet so many people with the same name." Obviously.
It's a strange feeling to know that there are nearly 200 people with the same name. To be honest, I'd presume there are more popular names out there like Suzuki and Sato. This achievement is really because of the efforts of our organizer.
The man who organized this gathering is a 53-year-old Hirokazu Tanaka who has worked for years to make this happen. He says his quest began in 1994 when he stumbled upon news about a baseball prodigy with the same name. After that, he began tirelessly scouring the nation for his namesakes. He then founded the Hirokazu Tanaka campaign that brought the men together and created a strange friendship among them. Thousands of baby turtles have been released into Peru's Amazon basin in an attempt to preserve the rainforest ecosystem. More than 6,000 hatchlings of three endangered species of turtles have been released into lakes and lagoons in Peru to help them repopulate. To make this happen, wildlife officials collected the eggs from their natural habitat and transferred them to artificial beaches until they hatched. The river turtles are considered vulnerable because for many years they have been killed for human consumption or kept as pets. Scientists are currently trying to conserve the Amazon to avoid catastrophic climate change, and Peru has the second largest share of the rainforest after Brazil. Another world record news. This time it has been set in Switzerland. A Swiss railway company has run the world's longest passenger train with a trip on one of the most spectacular tracks through the Alps. To celebrate its 175th anniversary, Switzerland's rail industry launched the world's longest ever passenger train, measuring around 2 kilometers. The electric train took almost an hour to cover around 25 kilometers over the UNESCO World Heritage Albula Line in eastern Switzerland. The Albula Line is famous for its endless swooping curves and steep descents. Rail enthusiasts lined the valley to watch the train's 100 cars snake through the Alps. Belgium and the Netherlands were the previous record holders for the world's longest passenger train. They used standard railway through the flat landscapes.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
If you enjoy street art, then you'll probably like Iztapalapa district in Mexico's capital city. Nearly 300 neighborhoods in this area are beautifully painted with brightly colored murals for all to enjoy. Visitors can also ride a cable car and take a tour of the art from above. The district is home to nearly 7,000 murals and graffiti painted on all sorts of surfaces, including rooftops. Iztapalapa Murals is a project that was promoted by the Mexico City's mayor in 2018. The goal of the project was to recover and dignify public spaces through art and involve neighbors in its creation and conservation. Iztapalapa is one of the poorest municipalities in the capital, and the initiative aims to reduce neighborhood violence through public lighting of the murals during the night.
It is never too late to learn a new skill. That's what 100-year-old Nada Rudan has shown with her art when she discovered her love for painting at the age of 87. The Bosnian native says she started to paint to keep herself busy, and now she finds the days are often too short to fit in everything she wanted to do. The artist paints for 3 hours in the morning and 2 hours in the afternoon without glasses. Rudan marked her 100th birthday with an exhibition of all the works that she has painted over the years.
My 100th birthday, I've celebrated it at sea. That was really a big event for me. Before that, I had an exhibition that I didn't hope for. But my children persuaded me. I was against it. I'm not an artist, I said. Children, don't embarrass me.
She says she's inspired by nature and her travel around the globe. Rudan has lived in numerous areas such as Central America, Hawaii Islands, Europe, and the Asian Himalayas, among many other places. The artist survived both World War II and the siege of Sarajevo by Bosnian Serb forces. Iran's Kish Island is known as the paradise of the Persian Gulf. Our correspondent Youssef Jalali has been to the stunning southern Iranian resort island and has filed this report about its beautiful attractions.
It's no land at the heart of a scorching but amazing island. This snow town is one of the latest entertainment centers in Iran's Kish Island in the Persian Gulf. Every year, some 2 million visitors from inside and outside Iran visit the island to enjoy its attractions, from its entertainment centers to its stunning beach.
The beach and the pier in Kish are really peaceful and tranquilizing. It's the third time I'm visiting the island, and I went parasailing, water skiing, and I'm planning to go scuba diving.
Kish Island offers all kinds of sea entertainment activities, from scuba diving to sailing, and oh yes, flyboarding. Besides sea sports, visitors can enjoy its amusement parks and a range of leisure activities inside the island. And if you're a tireless window shopper, Kish is a land of malls and shopping centers.
Kish is an amazing island. It used to be an abandoned island some 3 decades ago, but today it is a luxurious tourist resort with modern buildings and exciting recreational places.
Despite all the pleasure one can have in Kish, the island still has many shortcomings. The major issue annoying visitors is the poor accommodation services.
Hotel facilities and services are a bit weak given the large number of tourists that visit this island. They need to pay more attention to the accommodation infrastructure.
Just a few hundred kilometers away from Kish, there's a tourist magnet in the United Arab Emirates, Dubai, which absorbs the chunk of foreign tourists. While U.S. sanctions on Iran are a major factor to blame for Kish lagging behind in its rivalry with Dubai, the island's officials believe it still has a chance to win the game of tourism against Dubai.
If we want to excel, it is not going to be a tough job. We need to work on two major areas. The first is the infrastructure, and the second is regulations that would allow tourists or investors to easily come to Kish to entertain themselves or do business.
Situated off the southern coast of Iran in the Persian Gulf, Kish is one of Iran's free trade zones. Foreign travelers do not need a visa to visit the island, as travel permits are issued on arrival by Kish officials and are valid for up to 14 days.
With its mesmerizing nature and eye-catching urban landscapes, Kish has earned the title of the Bride of the Persian Gulf. Its authorities say the island is already a hub for Iranian travelers, but they say they seek to turn it into a regional tourist magnet. Youssef Jalali from Kish Island.
A 78-year-old artist is making a comeback with a unique art installation on Governor's Island in the United States of America. One of its biggest features is the sound and creaking of moving chains.
It's a project that I proposed for a commission in St. Louis. The site of the commission was the area near the Mississippi River and the St. Louis courthouse. So I wanted to do a piece that addressed those areas and, you know, the subjects. And so, and of course, we have those areas of the Mississippi River, which which is a place that you talk about the history of American commerce, but also we can talk about the history of slavery.
Charles Gaines wanted to highlight the role slavery played in building the economy of the United States. That's why he purposely used chains, and the sculptor pointedly faces the Statue of Liberty in New York City. The installation is roughly 30 meters long and activated by colossal chains that rotate on anchors. The installation is part of a three-chapter series called The American Manifest, Moving Chains. It will be kept for all to see until the summer of next year.
A Palestinian farmer has discovered an ancient Byzantine-era mosaic when preparing to plant an olive tree on his plot of land in the Gaza Strip. The farmer and his son have been carefully excavating the area for 3 months since spring. The pair dug out three patches, revealing glimpses of an ornate mosaic with intricate images of birds, flora, and tile patterns. Its full size is roughly 23 square meters. The discovery has set off excitement amongst archaeologists. Experts say it is one of the most well-preserved specimens, with precision in graphics and richness in colors. According to archaeologists, the mosaic pavement dates back to the 5th and 7th centuries. Last month, another Palestinian farmer found the rare stone sculpture while working on his land, which dates back to around 2500 BC.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
The Limelight.
Election in the occupied Palestinian territories means holding a ceremony to replace a war criminal with another, and this time the terrorist racist Netanyahu has come to power. In this regard, we have taken a look at some world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Crescent International wrote, "For Palestinians, the Zionist regime election results are familiar and meaningless. One set of war criminals has been replaced by another known to Palestinians as an unabashed racist and terrorist, Benjamin Netanyahu. He also faces criminal charges for graft and fraud. What else is new, and what are such charges in the face of the much weightier issue of returning to power in the Zionist snake pit? Besides the block of racists and bigots that Netanyahu leads, plans to remove the offense of fraud and breach of trust from the criminal code. This is what Netanyahu was on trial for. This will be among the first order of business if Netanyahu and his Likud bloc are able to cobble together the requisite number of seats in parliament," Kenneth said. On the basis of word count, he seems set to return to power. His disastrous rule for Palestinians of 12 years was brought to an end in March 2021 by an unlikely alliance of former Netanyahu allies, but they soon fell out because they had little in common, necessitating another election on November 1st. Before the Western corporate media indulges in its customary jingoism proclaiming the non-existent virtues of the only democracy in the West Asia region, let us remember that the fabricated regime of Israel is ruled by gangsters and hustlers. For the Palestinians under occupation, it makes little difference who rules the snake pit. After all, the just-defeated coalition led by Yair Lapid spared no effort to torture, maim, and kill Palestinians to prove his macho credentials. It was under his watch that Jenin and Nablus have suffered prolonged sieges and killings. Lapid also ordered a three-day attack on Gaza in early August after arresting an Islamic Jihad activist in Jenin. Illegal Zionist squatters from the US and Europe routinely barge onto the Masjid al-Aqsa compound, displaying this behavior, and under the protection of the heavily armed Israeli regime forces, they have attacked and killed Palestinians on the sacred compound. And this and more has happened under Lapid's watch. So what will change for the Palestinians if a well-known terrorist, Netanyahu, becomes the prime minister of the illegitimate entity? Nothing, except that Netanyahu indulges in terrorist acts with a scowl while his predecessor did it with a smile. The election campaign was also marred by vicious personal attacks on political opponents. If non-Jews were to repeat what they called their opponents, they would be immediately accused of anti-Semitism. Yet, the animosity between them runs so deep that had it not been for the Palestinians, they would be drinking each other's blood. That explains why the Zionists will never make peace with the Palestinians. The Zionist regime is not a democracy. It has never been. It is a colonial settler entity established on land stolen from the Palestinian people. Throughout its 74-year existence, the fabricated regime of Israel has indulged in horrific crimes against innocent Palestinians. In recent weeks and months, such attacks have escalated. No change in the Zionist regime policy toward the Palestinians can be expected under Netanyahu. In fact, the oppression of Palestinians will intensify. The terrorist Itamar Ben-Gvir, who emerged from the bowels of the fascist Kach movement, is likely to get a cabinet post in Netanyahu's regime. Netanyahu has vowed to expand the illegal Zionist settlements in the West Bank, and Ben-Gvir has publicly called for killing Palestinians. While the Palestinians long for peace and an end to their suffering, they will achieve neither. The only choice left for them is to continue the resistance by whatever means necessary. The Electronic Intifada wrote in this regard, for Palestinians on the ground, the election is likely to bring more tensions, but no real substantial change. After all, the fabricated regime of Israel was freely expanding settlements, detaining and killing Palestinians while demolishing their homes under the previous anyone but Netanyahu coalition. Nevertheless, the electoral triumph of Ben-Gvir is a further embarrassment for the international community, that is, Western countries led by the U.S. that are the main sponsors of the Oslo Accords will now have to justify their support for an Israeli regime government that unashamedly contradicts U.S. and international policy.